Early.
Here.
Carol. DeLuca. Flowers. Gonzalez. Hernandez. Hershauer.
Oh, here.
LaPointe. Ma. Mayfield.
Mayfield's here.
Moylan. Yednock.
Here.
Windhorst.
Present.
Boss.
Here.
Chesney. Ellick.
Here.
McCombie.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
Ugasti. Willauer. All right. And I see Representative Carol there.
Yeah, Carol's here. All right. Thank you.
And we are all set, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Clerk. And I want to thank staff for being very diligent on putting this meeting together and all the members for being here. The task force that we have here, it's been very active, and members of the community have been asking to testify before this committee. So they've reached out to Representative Fran Hurley and myself, the Safer Foundation, and Live Free Illinois Project to testify before this task force. So with that, we have Safer Foundation that will testify, and we have Live Free Illinois Project that will testify. So the Public Safety and Violence Prevention Task Force hearing shall come to order. Representative Fran Hurley and Windhorst.
Again, just looking forward to the conversation, and thank you to everybody who's who's speaking today.
Yes, I join in thanking the staff for putting this together and for our witnesses for being here. Look forward to having this discussion.
Thank you very much. And so if any other members, you're here, if you have anything that you would like to say, please chime in, raise your hand right now so we can open it up to you. If not, we should go straight to Safer Foundation for their presentation. Thank you for being here, Mr. Bob.
Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Chair Ford and Chair Hurley, Representative Windhorst, and other honorable members of the task force. My name is Kevin Brown. I'm the Senior Director of External Affairs and Community Partnerships with the Safer Foundation. Safer Foundation is a reentry organization celebrating 50 years in this space this year. So we have longevity as well as evidence-based practices that have been helpful to individuals with arrests and conviction records. With me today is Sadika Williams, our Senior Vice President for Reentry Services, Mark McCombs, our Policy Analyst, Avalon Betts-Gaston, the Project Manager for the Illinois Alliance for Reentry and Justice, and Paul Stewart from Illuminari Public Affairs. We are coming to you this morning to speak briefly with a presentation on the Safer Foundation Second Chance Act State Initiative. I'm going to allow Paul to get started with a brief presentation, and then we will answer any questions regarding our initiative and further discussion about reentry and holistic support of reentry practices. So Paul Stewart.
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning to the chair and members of the committee. With your permission, I will share my screen and take you through a brief presentation on the Second Chance State Initiative. Okay, thank you again this morning. As Kevin said, we have Sadika Williams, Kevin Brown, Mark McCombs, and Avalon Betts-Gaston with the SAFER Foundation on behalf of the Second Chance State Initiative. The objective of the initiative is to ensure that returning residents have essential services necessary to fully reintegrate into the communities by ensuring that they can support themselves and their families through employment and engage in their communities and feel that they are reconnected upon release from incarceration. The overview that we have for the initiative is the opportunity that we and the state legislature has to reimagine our criminal legal system. We can do this by adopting a comprehensive public health approach to public safety. And we want to use the Second Chance State Act as the vehicle through which to look at this reimagined criminal legal system. It's imperative that justice-involved individuals are assisted by addressing the social determinants of health, which we are all aware have historically affected individuals' medical health outcomes, but we also know through studies that these social determinants of health also have a direct impact on influencing better societal outcomes following involvement with the criminal legal system. And we all understand that if we have healthy individuals coming back into the community, then we will have healthy communities. The social determinants of health, as we've all spoken of them in various settings, and it's become more widely known, are those external impacts that have a direct impact on the health of an individual. Because of the access to healthcare, education, economic stability, their neighborhood and environment in which they live, as well as their social and community context, these matters will directly impact the success or not of an individual and their health outcomes. But as stated earlier, we also understand how critically important all of these and other social determinants have a direct impact on societal outcomes as individuals return to their communities following incarceration. So what do we know right now? We know that Illinois' current approach to the justice reform system is not working. We understand that justice-involved individuals should have the opportunity for interaction and receive services with their first interaction with the justice system. It's more impactful if we can have services provided to those individuals when they first come into contact with our justice and legal system than upon their release from incarceration. And throughout their entire interaction with the courts, prison, and after release, we want to ensure that we're providing those services that will allow for a successful transition back to their communities upon release from incarceration. And these are the areas of need that we feel those individuals that have been involved with the criminal legal system and the justice system will need most for their successful reentry into the community upon release from any involvement with the justice legal system. The physical, social, intellectual, spiritual, emotional, and environmental needs have to all be addressed in order for a successful transition for reentry into the community. So, the SAFER Foundation and other advocates in the criminal justice reform space are proposing that the centerpiece of our initiative would be the Second Chance State Act. This act will create the statewide agency, which will have as its main responsibility the coordination of government and non-for-profit programs. We want to have the opportunity to have comprehensive, personalized services developed to help justice-involved residents. And again, we feel as though this will dramatically reduce the likelihood of returning to criminal activity and interaction with the criminal legal system. And ultimately, what we propose through the state act is to create a comprehensive public health approach to public safety.
Mr. Stewart, we have just a little bit of housekeeping. We want to ask that Brian Fitzgerald is going to be the host of the meeting instead of Brian DePasquale. So could we change that and then go ahead? Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Sure. Thank you. The framework that is proposed as part of the Second Chance State Act would be the development of a new agency which would develop and administer the Second Chance State Program. That program and the agency will be tasked with coordinating, again, all government and not-for-profit services with justice-involved individuals throughout the state of Illinois. We propose to do this through a network of 13 hubs throughout the state of Illinois, led by community-led service providers that would be overseen and coordinated through the new proposed state agency. You see the geographic areas that are being proposed for the 13 hub sites across the state. Those community-led organizations would then have their programming facilitated by navigators, community navigators, who will then help these justice-involved residents effectively access the services that are proposed to be provided to them throughout their interaction with the legal justice system. The navigator's role would be to help create a individual, comprehensive, and holistic service plan for those returning residents, again, with the goal of being to reduce the probability of recidivism and allow those residents a higher level of success when they return to their community. And these are the elements of successful reentry. Many of these services are currently provided by various agencies and organizations throughout the state of Illinois. The challenge is that for a resident that is re-entering their community, it's oftentimes very difficult to access all of these necessary services in a comprehensive way and in an effective way, which will allow them the highest probability for success when re-entering their communities. So the state agency that would be developed would oversee the coordination of all of these services, both by government and non-government providers, so that we would have a comprehensive and more strategic manner in which these services are delivered, and that these returning residents would be able to come back to a healthy community and a healthy state with all of the tools that they would need in order to fully reintegrate into their community. The ultimate responsibility of the agency, again, is the coordination of all of these services, but we also understand how government works and that there would need to be an interagency council to ensure that all of these agencies have the necessary allocations to coordinate and combine their resources in order to have them be the most effective means to support these returning residents. Ultimately, as we've said multiple times, we believe that healthy people equal healthy communities. And there's been a lot of talk recently about our communities and the state of our communities. We believe that individuals who are returning to the community can return to be productive and contributing residents within their communities. but they need all of the assistance and services and supports in order to help them in a holistic manner become healthy and return to their communities in a productive manner. So I thank you for the time to review this presentation, and we will open for question if that's appropriate.
Usually we would wait for questions at the end, Co-Chair Ford or Vice Chair Windhorst, is that okay? Unless somebody has something pertinent for Mr. Stewart.
I'm happy to wait till the end if everyone else is.
Okay. So thank you. And then who's ever next, please proceed. Ms. Williams, I think, is next on the agenda, or Mr. Brown. I'm not sure.
Rep Hurley, that is the extent of our presentation on the Second Chance State Act initiative. My colleagues are joining me to answer any questions at the end of the task force meeting.
Okay. Well, since it's the end of your presentation, we'll see if anybody has any questions for the Safer Foundation. Members, if you have some now or later, it's fine.
Your hurdle. Go ahead. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
There were 13 sites that were listed. How were those chosen?
I'm going to allow Mr. McCombs, the author of the legislation, to address the details. This was modeled after approved state legislation. Mark McCombs.
Thank you, Kevin. Representative, that the 13 hub sites replicate the exact same hub sites that are in the CEJA bill, same locations. And they actually also, by coincidence, reflect the parts of the state where most returning residents return after they've served their incarceration.
Is it envisioned that those hubs will serve more than just the city they're in and serve the region they're in, or is it?
No, that's exactly it, Representative. They would serve more than the city they're in. They would serve the entire region that they're located.
Thank you. That was a question I had.
Anyone else have any questions? Co-Chair Ford, do you have anything for Safer Foundation? Okay, well, at this point, we'll just move on to Live Free Illinois Project, and then if somebody has questions at the end, we can come back to you if that's okay. Okay, thank you. So Reverend Chamberlain, I think from The Free Illinois Project. Are you ready?
I am ready. Okay. And good morning to everyone, to my colleagues at the Safer Foundation. It's always amazing to see friends. First, I want to thank the members of the Public Safety and Violence Prevention Task Force. Thank you, Chairman Representative Ford, Co-Chairman Representative Hurley, and Representative Windhorst. Again, I am Reverend Sierra Bakes Chamberlain. I'm the Executive Director of Live Free Illinois, where we organize faith-based communities across the state, as well as those who are directly impacted by gun violence and incarceration. Live Free is also a part of a national network where we organize around these issues across the country. And we're part of a network that is in 20 states and 50 cities, one of the largest, if not the largest, Black-led organization leading in evidence-based strategy to reduce gun violence across the country. Now, during a time where criminal justice reform is being threatened, I want to uplift the need to defend and continue to make progress on the advancements made and continue to work toward progress. Live Free Illinois work is uniquely positioned at the intersection of criminal justice reform and public safety. This is intentional because we understand that these two issues work in tandem. As an organization on the forefront of gun violence reduction policy, We are seeing the increased calls for more carceral and punitive approaches. I want to mention that carceral and law enforcement center strategies do not reduce violence, and this is proven through research and, more importantly, by the communities most impacted. Public safety is achieved when we invest in the community, and any law enforcement approaches should not be centered on funding the police, but in holding departments accountable to clearance rates, which are deplorable in communities most impacted by gun violence. Live Free Illinois is working to address clearance rates, and oftentimes our communities are over-policed and underprotected. Again, this is not a call for increased funding because it is not necessary, but this is a call to shine light on the severely broken system within our departments that cause shootings and homicides to be treated differently in affluent communities versus low-income Black communities. And I can assure you, it is a myth that it's the community's lack of care and a flat-out disgrace to continue to blame community members versus holding flawed systems accountable. So again, public safety is about investing in communities. And this is why, in addition to the policies that you'll hear from Alex Brown, Live Free Illinois is working on our decarceration fellowship. Live Free Illinois' decarceration fellowship is a way to reimagine reentry. It is well established that racially charged criminal justice policies and practices have negatively impacted the health and well-being of communities of color. The Decarceration Fellowship, being developed by Live Free Illinois, aims to improve individual outcomes and opportunities for recently returning citizens while also building future leaders who will use their skills and experiences to challenge over-punitive and racially charged criminal justice policies and practice. With support, and we are so happy to have this collaboration, so with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Interdisciplinary Research Leaders Program, and in partnership with Northwestern's Neighborhood and Network Initiative, the research teams will use primarily qualitative research methods to document the implementation process and generate preliminary evidence on the effectiveness of the decarceration fellowship programs. In addition to our decarceration fellowship, Live Free is launching a community healing center pilot across the state. And for the sake of time, I don't have the opportunity to go in depth about this pilot, but I will be more than happy to share more information in the future. Again, I am more than willing to come back and expand more on public safety and criminal justice reform and address the committee if you will be willing to have me. And I am happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Sierra, for such great information. Hello, everyone. Good morning. My name is Alexander Brown, and I'm a Live Free leader with Live Free Illinois. As a Live Free leader, I represent, advocate, and encourage those to rise and allow their voice to be heard pertaining to any injustices they have faced or any change they feel can make our world better. I am here today to talk about the ending of permanent punishments in Illinois. And the way we plan to address this concern is through the Fully Free campaign along with the Clean Slate Initiative. Now, as we discuss the Fully Free campaign is a free act that restores the dignity and honors to families throughout Illinois to carry out the last wishes and affairs of loved ones. Families should be free to choose who takes on this sacred duty. People living with a record should be free to honor their family and fulfill their loved ones' wishes. The Fully Free campaign supports the family's right to estate equity. The problem is that current law prohibits anyone with a family conviction with a felony conviction from serving as an executor or administrator of an estate after a family member or loved one has passed away. There was no evidence or justification for this law. The impact is that in Illinois, over 6,000 people have a felony conviction. This is 600,000 people and their families who have experienced further anxiety and stress by limiting their ability to choose a loved one who is best positioned to handle this responsibility. The solution, SB3098/HB4490, which removes the language in the Illinois Probate Act that prohibits anyone with a felony conviction from serving as an executor or administrator of an estate. Why is this personal or very deep to me? Because 14 months ago, I was released from prison. The issue was that when I was first incarcerated in 2018, my mother passed away day after Mother's Day. 4 months after my incarceration. This could have particularly prohibited me from acquiring a home that I was raised in, which would have affected me very deeply. I also want to talk to you about the Clean Slate Initiative. Over 3 million people with some form of arrest or conviction on their background. 2.2 million of those people qualify for some type of relief, but only 10% of those who qualify have taken advantage of this relief, which means there are at least 2 million people who have not taken advantage of this opportunity. The question is why? It could be because lack of being informed, simply not knowing that they qualify. It could also mean that some people are just not mentally competent to know or understand that they can take advantage of this opportunity. So some people don't even believe that they can qualify. I ran across a gentleman who had a conviction, was over 21 years old, and he was discussing and just in so much hurt and pain because he felt like it was hindering him from moving on to life. I encouraged him that he could get this conviction sealed, but he wouldn't believe me. He would not take my word for it. So the only thing that I could do was encourage him to seek out information or to find someone that could help prove that what I was saying was accurate. As we think about these initiatives I just shared with you this morning, remember the Fully Free campaign supports families' right to estate equity and the Clean Slate Initiative. These two initiatives, if not supported, may lead to homelessness, which can lead to incarceration because of an individual's inability to acquire a loved one's estate, because of criminal records, or because of an inability to thrive in life due to criminal backgrounds. Just take me for, let me be your example. 14 months ago, I was just released from prison. Now, fortunately, I was smart enough and had the education to get a paralegal certificate, which allowed me to understand how the law works. But just imagine if we had 2.2 million people that had the same advantage that I had to get their records automatically cleaned and expunged. The only issue is that even if we did inform these 2.2 million people today, there's no way that they can rush the courts and get all this done within the next 5 to 10 years. So I think that the best solution would be to support the Clean Slate Initiative and let's push forward and go for automatic expungements and sale of records. Thank you, people.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Looks like Representative Yednock has a question. Go ahead.
I want to know about the Fully Free Act that you're talking about. Does anybody know the history as to why and when we said that someone that had a conviction, a felony conviction before, couldn't be executors in their own family? Does anybody know the history behind why this was changed or why it was made that way?
We're not sure as to why it changed, but it was a part of the 1975 Probate Act.
1975 Probate, okay. I'd like to know the history behind something, why it became that way. So I don't know, that'll take a little more research on my part to understand that. And then, so the Clean Slate Initiative would be to automatically expunge. Now, when we're talking about expunging, automatically expunge, what sort of convictions? Can you go to a little more detail of what that would be, Alex?
So you have criminal convictions that automatically qualify for expungements. Okay. And the thing is that if we can automatically expunge them because they automatically qualify anyway, because the only issue from getting expunged is that people have to know about it and go to court and get the process right. You have clinics like Cabrini Green Legal Aid that are doing it, but if only 10% are informed about it, and CGLA is overwhelmed with the amount of the part of the 10% that they're working with now, just imagine if they had to deal with the whole 2.2 million. It would almost be like impossible. So I'm not clearly exactly sure. I'm pretty sure there are certain things that can't be expunged, like I think anything like predatorial or sexual misconduct or things like assault. I'm sure that it can't be expunged, but it's just more like arrests that didn't lead to convictions. And even though you didn't get a conviction, but you do have an arrest, it still looks bad on your background.
Okay, I understand that part. I guess I would want to know a little more about what is automatically available for expungement and what is not. I understand that at a level that, you know, if you're not convicted of something, it probably shouldn't follow you. At the same time, I believe that we've talked about almost $1 billion in funds this year for, you know, community services, violence prevention programs, et cetera. And I would think that some of those community organizations might, you know, use some of this money to do that, to advertise, to get out in the community and do that. So I want to make sure that, you know, that's part of the appropriation that I see, you know, should be that appropriation should be used for things like that. Because if that's what it's about, I mean, I would hope that you're pushing on community organizations to use those funds in that manner too. But I want to know a little bit more about the Clean Slate Initiative so I know what's there or not. I mean, I appreciate this is really, I haven't had anybody explain these two acts to me or positions. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate your answers.
And if I can just add to that for 1 second, we are still working to actually carve out what exactly will be the official language. So a lot of this we're talking with stakeholders and to elected officials as we're finalizing this language. But today was our opportunity to begin to introduce this concept and what's to come in the coming months.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question just to kind of follow on Representative Yednox, and if you've mentioned it, I apologize. What type of funding do you guys get from the state, Live Free and Safer Foundation? And then you mentioned over policing. I just want to say there's a lot of people that feel that there's not enough police around. So there's a lot of people that are retiring and such from the city of Chicago, and they're doing a fine job. But more concerned about the monies, what you guys are getting.
So from Live Free does not currently receive any state money. And as far as with the over policing, I think it depends on which communities you speak to, because if you speak to Black and Brown communities, we will stand on that we are over policed and under protected.
At Safer, we receive a variety of funds from the state that do fund our workforce development and training programs, mental and behavioral health services. We do receive ICJA in our some violence reduction initiatives as well.
If you could get the committee a number on that funding, that would be great.
Yes, we'll follow up with that.
Thank you. Anybody else have any questions for either Live Free or the Safer Foundation? Co-chair Ford.
Thank you, Chair Early. To the Safer Foundation, are you working with the Sheriff Department on this initiative? I know that we were talking to Sheriff Dart's office about the project that you are introducing. How's that working now?
That would be Mr. McCombs has been in communication with the sheriff. We have a partnership with the sheriff's office to deliver webinar related services, but Mr. McCombs is working on those projects. Can you elaborate, Mark?
Thanks, Rep. Ford. I know the sheriff's office has reached out to you and given you a little bit of an idea. We have had very extensive discussions working hand in glove with Sheriff Dart's office on the language, the rollout, the implementation, what type of coordination we would be doing with them in particular, because they've been at the forefront of providing mental health services, et cetera, to people coming out of their system. And we look forward to continuing to engage in those discussions with them and seeing where we can collaborate, seeing where we have areas of mutual interest.
Yeah, thank you. And so will the Safer Foundation and Arts Office be trying to understand if it's a competitive type of initiative? Will you guys be competing or will you be collaborating?
How so The initiative itself is would be a statewide initiative, and community-based providers would have an opportunity to work with the new agency to compete for funding that would be available to actually fund the services in coordination. That is the biggest concern that we have now, is that there are state agencies that are providing services, but there is not a coordinated effort in order to bring those services under one umbrella that can be led by community-based providers who really have a reach into the individuals that need the services. And we just believe that that coordination could take place through a new agency led by returning residents. A model right now that is being implemented is in the city of Chicago with its new office for returning residents led by Director Willette Benford.
And Representative, if I could just piggyback on what Kevin said, is I think in Paul Stewart's presentation on this, he talked about how these community-based organizations operating from these hubs would be coordinating not just services provided by non-governmental entities, but also existing services provided by governmental entities like the Sheriff's Community Resource, like the Cook County Sheriff's Community Resource Center. And the reason why I don't think this would ever become a competition and would be more in the form of a collaboration, because I don't think it's possible, due to the fact that the need far outpaces the services that are currently available. I think the issue here is making sure that when a returning resident or an individual interacts with the judicial system, that they are pointed in the right direction, either the Community Resource Center or to some non-governmental organization, because it's not happening right now. They're not getting the services they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we do collaborate, and there is enough, there are enough people that need to be served for everyone to collaborate and share the responsibility. Let's turn to Live Free. Could you tell us the difference between sealing and expungement? Just for the record, so people know, and what are the benefits of each?
Sure. Sealing means that it can still be asset. The record can still be seen by certain entities. If it's expunged, it's completely off of the record. And the benefit of it is, I'll be frank, and just the big piece of it for me, if a person has completed their time, as a faith leader, I'm going to say that they should absolutely have it expunged off of their record. We cannot continue to, in this society, to hold this over people. But practically, if the record is expunged, again, there are some people who can still have access to your record if it is sealed. So this goes down for employment opportunities, that people would, there are certain things that people could be able to move themselves from a different economic bracket, but they still have that record, again, that can be accessed by certain authorities. And so for individuals who want to be able to move forward with their lives, they don't want anyone to be able to access anything in their past, and they want it completely removed. And that's why they would have it expunged. Now, in some cases where it may be okay to, where, you know, things are sealed because I guess so that certain entities can still have access to it where it's not completely removed, they will say that's an added layer. But again, expungement is completely removed. Sealed, certain authorities still have access to that record.
Now, your presentation, was your presentation about sealing arrests or convictions, expunging arrests or convictions, or both?
Both will be included. And so, like I said, we would love to have the opportunity to come back with our full coalition and team, because we do have a breakdown, and we will have the language solidified that will show the specific convictions that would be eligible for expungement, and then also the time frame that we are recommending.
So when we talk about public safety and violence prevention, and we talk about sealing records and expunging records, is there any evidence to show that expunging records make our communities more safe?
You know, I think we can act that in the reverse.
I'm a supporter. I filed legislation for expungement, so I'm a supporter, but we need to convince people. And you can answer it however you want to answer it and say it however you want. That's your right.
Right. No, and we appreciate you for being a champion on this issue, but I was just making the statement of saying that we can ask that in the reverse. How does these things prevent or provide public safety? And the answer is there is no research that says that it does. So then this continues to be added barriers to community members who are trying to move forward in their lives and who are trying to make sure that they have access to housing and other employment opportunities. So again, the question is, where's the research that shows that it has worked? But we have plenty of research to show how it has been a hindrance to our community, specifically Black and Brown communities.
Yeah. So, you know, when the same thing is with credit. You know, credit is an indicator. When a person has bad credit, it's an indication that they may not pay their bills on time. I'm trying to figure out if we can make the case that that a person with a conviction on their record is probably going to commit another crime. There's got to be some evidence and studies to support one way or the other.
May I, sir, I know you're asking questions of others. I would say until we can actually get that study conducted, the best way to move forward is to have the actual testimony and experience of the people that it impacts. Out of the 8 years that I've been at the Safer Foundation and done this work, all of it's been meaningful. But one of the most meaningful moments is when I was leading, working with pro bono attorneys, a sealing summit. And to have the individuals with me, you know, waiting to get their record sealed and expunged, it was liberation for them, you know, real hope for the first time to actually have the ability to go for an opportunity and be considered for their qualification, credentials, experience, and fit with an employer versus the stigma of a record. And the follow-up since then of those individuals, okay, how is it going now? I can actually get a job. I can get a job. I can move forward. I can provide for my family, you know, and so it's just, I think we can work on capturing that testimony and the stories you know, and having a diversity of people, right, from all around the state who can probably speak to that in terms of how it makes a difference in their lives. And until we can get that more quantitative data that you're talking about, we can focus on the qualitative.
Can I add one thing, Rep Ford?
Brown?
Yes, there. Actually, I also sit on the Clean Slate campaign initiative, and we're working with a national coalition on Clean Slate. There was a pretty extensive study done that I can send the committee from the University of Michigan, which outline the impact of Clean Slate legislation upon participants. It also talked about the gap that Ms. Chamberlain spoke of in terms of individuals who are not knowledgeable about what the remedies they do have that are available to them. And it talked about ways to close the gap and the positive impacts upon the states where that had occurred. So I will send that to you for distribution to the committee.
Rep, if, If I could just chime in real quickly, I know Sadaka talked about people with personal experience. I just wanted to spend a second, you know, talking about my own personal experience. I've got a law degree from Northwestern and a felony conviction on my record. When I came out of prison, I applied for a dishwashing job and was turned down because I have a felony conviction on my record. And I don't know if they thought that somehow, you know, this was a job in a restaurant to put dishes on a rack and run them through a machine. I don't know if they thought that I was going to somehow, you know, hide the dishes under my shirt and take them out. But if I'm having that problem with a law degree and knowledge of the system and everything else, imagine what it's like for people who don't have that educational background and those resources.
Yeah, I appreciate that, team. I would say there's no doubt that if you have if you put barriers in front of reformed individuals, that is a threat to public safety. And that's what I believe, because people are not able to have gainful employment. They're not able to have housing. They're not able to provide for their families. And that's always a risk factor for criminal behavior, but not for everyone. So I think giving people an opportunity that's totally reformed, an opportunity to have their full citizenship back, is the American way. And I do believe that it is a public safety issue by holding people down and not giving them the ability to be full citizens. You should go to Representative Yetnot.
Well, thank you, Chair Ford. Most of the follow-up questions I had were answered here in some of the other testimony, but Mrs. Williams, Ms. Williams, you know, if you've had experience over the last 8 or so years, then there are probably, you know, data that you could share with us of those who got expungement and then were able to get jobs and do that. I think that would be a great contrast if there's a way for you to, you know, even pull some data on that. Because it might help me, you know, make up my mind on what you're trying to approve there. Because I think, all of us in all of our communities, you know, we want to see returning citizens have the opportunity to have a job and do the things that they're maybe held out for. I think we just have to know the details of who gets expunged. And if it does work in a, you know, large percentage, I'm not even saying that if it only works in a small percentage, that it isn't worth it. But I think those are some things we want to know. So maybe the study that Mr. Brown talked about and what you might have in raw data would be very helpful. Thank you.
And evidence shows that, you know, people, the sealing of records have been going on for a very long time in Illinois and across the country. And there has not been a move to repeal that law. It really works. And even if a person has their record sealed, the law is still in place to convict them again for what they've done. So there's no indication that a felony conviction is an indication that a person is a risk to the community. So with that said, I turn it back over to Chair Hurley.
No need to turn it over. If there's any other questions, great. If not, then we'll thank everybody for coming today and sharing their information.
All right, and we look forward to hearing from you all.
Mr. Brown?
I just want to speak. Yes, ma'am. I just want to speak on one of my lived experiences of having these barriers. When I first started beginning to have my family, you know, having that on your background would prevent you from housing. So, of course, the mother wasn't working. I was the only one working, but I couldn't get housing because of the background. So I had to pay someone else just to get the housing for me. And it's kind of a tough situation because the landlord expects the person on the lease to live there, but it's something that I had to go through just to provide housing for my family. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
And Chair Hurley, I just wanted to go back when Rep. Ford asked the question about competition and collaboration. I wanted to clarify that I wasn't saying that the agencies that are community-based would be competing against one another. I was specifically talking about funding. The whole objective of the Second Chance State Initiative is to foster a collaborative partnership in support of community.
Okay, I'll throw it back to Chair Ford.
That's it. Renhurst, do you have any closing remarks? We're going to need a bipartisan conversation on this issue.
Well, definitely we'll have to have a bipartisan conversation with a lot of the proposals. Of course, the details are important, particularly when we talk about sealing and expungement. There are things I think people on representatives on my side of the aisle will agree with. There are those that we probably won't, but we should have the conversation and see where this lands. As well with the Second Chance program, I think the details for us are important on what that means. If we want individuals to be who are in the system to be restored to useful citizenship, that should be a goal of the system. But we have to make sure we're doing that in a safe and responsible way that respects all those who are involved. Thank you.
Thank you. And of course, this committee should make the point that this is an opportunity for people to come before to state their positions. And we, as a committee, don't intend to sway or persuade, but I think that it's your job as organizations to make your case. And so I might have got a little into it because I like it, but yeah. So thank you so very much for being here and asking to come. So Representative Hurley, will you close it out? You might have some final words.
No, just again, thank you to everybody for appearing today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.